a Motorsport Podcast Network production.
The Brad Jones Racing Rundown with Chris Westwood and Macaulay Jones.
Right, welcome to episode 4 of the BJR Rundown. I am Macaulay Jones, and this weekend for this episode we have a bit of a different lineup. We've got Brad Jones here co-hosting, we'll call it. So Chris, our general manager, is away this week, so we've got Brad filling in as his second time on the podcast, which is pretty exciting for him. He's held off for a little while getting onto the podcast, and now he's 2 in a row. You feel privileged?
I do. It was a nervous night waiting for this moment, so I didn't get a lot of sleep, so I'll just, you know, focus on putting my best foot forward.
Absolutely.
For you.
Absolutely. You've got your notes and you're ready to go.
This headset's a bit uncomfortable, isn't it? That cord bumps into you all the time. Anyway, onwards we go.
Anyway, thanks for that insight. We'll get that fixed for you.
Yeah, could you?
Anyway, so we're off the back of the Bathurst 500, the first round of the Supercars Championship for 2024. And I would say it was probably a bit of a disappointing one for BJR as a whole. I think, you know, we had a really strong test in the lead up, and probably some of the things that we had tried there and worked there didn't really correlate for Bathurst. You know, we seem to be struggling a little bit in qualifying. What do you think from the weekend?
Well, there's a couple of things to talk about. I mean, one of the great things for me to going racing again is, you know, you and I get to travel together.
How lucky.
Yeah. So, you know, there's that. But I felt a strong test at Winton. We were pretty speedy there. And as happens a lot of times when you put something new in the car, it doesn't always correlate when you go to a different event. And that was definitely the case, I felt, at Bathurst. We've been struggling with qualifying for 6 months now, and we're trying different things, and it would be fair to say that qualifying both days was pretty disappointing. I felt Bryce was pretty good, you know, and that was our base car, but with the other cars we were, you know, around and not quite where we wanted to be. So
I guess with the qualifying side of things, I mean, to explain it, I feel like our race cars are very strong. But we feel like when we're qualifying out of position from our race pace, it makes it very difficult. And the qualifying is a very different. When you're trying to unlock the tyre, the speed of the tyre over a one lap, you know, the peak speed, we just seem to be lacking that. Even in the race, you know, we're not going to go out and do the fastest lap of the race and hold on to your tyres. We seem to have this almost like this ceiling of lap time, and we can hold this ceiling quite consistently, but we just don't seem to have that new tyre peak speed. We just don't unlock that. And it's not like the balance is horrible either. It's sort of, you know, you're doing the lap and you feel like the balance isn't that bad. It's not doing anything too ugly. It just doesn't seem to unlock the speed, really.
Very true. And so what happens is the car is difficult when you want to drive at 11 tenths or 12 tenths to try and get a time out of it over a lap. It's difficult because, you know, you look at all the drivers that even on their fastest lap, they're having moments. And I know that's normal, but I feel like our cars, listening to the feedback from the drivers, are especially difficult when you try and drag that.
It's a bit unforgiving.
Very unforgiving. But as you said, it's a fast race car. It's a fast race car. Saturday, we had a good passing car. But Sunday, not so much. So
it's a lot hotter on the Sunday as well. The UV, the sun was a lot higher as well. So that kind of plays a bit of a part. But yeah.
Maybe. But I felt like we've definitely got some work to do. And you know, to your point, fast race cars, not fast qualifying cars. We need to fix that up. And everyone here is working really hard. We had a meeting about it on the Tuesday. And with the engineering group and myself, and we're working through it. So hopefully we can, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, so I'm not thinking this is just going to be instantly fixed, but we're looking at all our options. Yep. We're about to go to a place which is going to be quite aero dependent. We're going there with more aero than we had last year. Yeah. And the cars are very different. It was, you know, only the second race last year. We have a lot more experience. So, you know, we can talk about that a little bit later. But Bathurst, you know, tough weekend, you know, and you know, there's always a bit of a knock-on effect, right? So one of the things that I'm not a big fan of is the live pit lane, and so then we quickly drop from third to fifth, and then
I mean, luckily at AGP we don't have that because we don't actually have a pit lane for that weekend, so kind of at least it gives you two rounds to sort of try and help that and let it, you know, sort itself out a bit more.
Yeah, and a couple of things, you know, I became aware of at Bathurst that I hadn't really put as much thought into, but I mean, having new neighbours, you know, you don't know them, and so you take a bit of time to get to know what their expectation is, how you work together, because and what's going to happen is now almost every race meeting for the first part of the year, you're going to have a new neighbour. And so you've got to get used to working with that team. So plus the drivers are going to be pulling up in different spots. There's so many things that contribute to it. What's interesting is when the commission voted on this, I think there was probably three people that didn't like it that much, and I was one of them. But now I look and see where the people have moved, and I reckon it'd be a 50-50 vote if you did it again now. So
yeah, I sort of agree. I think once it's actually come out into fruition, and you're realizing that, you know, it's like you say, logistics of the people, the teams that you're working with, the drivers having to use different pit bays. I mean, even for us being so much further up in the pit lane than what we were last year, it's almost like this muscle memory that you go to halfway down the lane, you go to turn in, and you really have to consciously think like, oh no, look for your box now. It's like
you do. And Bathurst is big and wide open. I can remember when we had the BOC cars and we went to, you know, driving suits and team suits. The team suits were solidly red, and I remember halfway through the race, Scaife pulled into our pit bay. I was standing there ready to do a pit stop. It's a pity they didn't jack him up. I would have jumped in it, but you know, everyone was waving at him, and he didn't. Then he kept on going to HRT, but he very easily pulled into our pit. So hopefully that won't be an issue. But the good thing with supercars is they understand that this could be tricky, and after speaking to them all through this process, they're happy enough if it doesn't work out that they're willing to revert back to the old rules, which that's really important that they've got a very open mind about this.
Yeah. And what did you think of the racing over the weekend as a whole?
The interesting thing for me was we ran on the hard tyre there, and you know, there's chat about that's what we're going to do at the 1000, which I think we probably will. I thought the racing was okay.
It's a hard track, I think, for it, especially with the pit stops that you had. I mean, the two stops, really, you could do it on one stop. I mean, you only had a 60-litre fuel drop, so that wasn't, you know, a massive, massive factor. You had the two tyre stops, which it just meant your stints could be quite short overall, or you could do two shorter stints, one longer stint. I think that was a little bit probably odd. I think the with that track, it's the passing is very difficult. It's very aero. It's very, you know, it leans itself to the endurance event, and I think it was, you know, probably evident that there wasn't a heap of passing going on.
Well, there's not a lot of passes at places you can pass.
Exactly. Yeah, and then it's, you know, different cars have different strengths, which I think we'll sort of go into in a minute about like the speed trap stuff. And so we saw from qualifying, you know, Mostert had the fastest sector over the top of the hill by 3 or 4 tenths in the top 10 shootout, but he was slower down the bottom of the hill. And so like that kind of plays a big part. You can't pass at the top of the hill, but you can pass generally down the bottom. And so that can be a bit of a balance.
Well, you can make time. You know, we were parked next to 888, and so obviously we look and see how much wing they have. And, you know, for a lot of people, what they don't understand is you see the cars going around, you look at the speed trap times, and you just think, wow, that thing's not fast enough in a straight line.
Exactly.
But the truth is they're putting wing on it so it grips up across the top of the hill, but you get nothing for nothing.
Yeah.
So then it's slower down the straight. So interestingly, I spoke to Tim Edwards, and it was his first meeting as on the other side of the fence.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so I said to him, what do you think? And he said, man, coming to this side, looking at the difference in the cars with cambers, casters,
ride height,
wing angle, it's really hard to tell. And I think supercars have done a really good job with the wind tunnel testing and what they're doing with the AVL. And, you know, the cars are closer than they've ever been. So I know there's a bit of an outcry, but I don't think there's a lot in it. But as you said, you know, yeah. You look at one car going fast across the top of the hill, and I could see that the 888 cars had a lot of wing taken off them. So
yeah, and Larko actually had a piece in race two, and he was talking about the cambers, which were quite a lot different, I think, over the field spread, which is obviously a very setup, you know, dependent kind of direction, really. So different cars want different cambers for whatever they're trying to achieve, and it is a bigger part of the picture of with the wing and the way you're setting up the car. But you know, he noted that Chaz looks like he has a massive amount of rear camber, which it sort of looked like he did, which might give you the grip at the top.
Yeah, well, but it contributes, right?
So yeah, and so
there's about generating grip.
Yeah, and where you want to generate the grip, you know, it's like where do you want to pick your strengths and your weaknesses, and they obviously had a very different style of achieving the lap time.
What did you think about the softer tire versus a harder tire as a driver?
I probably like the harder tire. I mean, you're just driving harder the whole time, you know, and I think that is sort of what it was before we used the soft, where the soft, you had to be very conscious of it. I mean, you still had a bit of tire deg, but not really a lot. I mean, compared to the fuel burn, it was kind of like how it's always been. Mm. You could go faster at the end of the stint with the fuel burn versus the tire deg, and so that kind of evened out the delta, I would say. And so I probably preferred the hard tire there, but I also, you know, yeah, I probably would say that it's going to be a better option.
There was a lot of people on the radio talking about having, you know, inside front locking, and you know, I think it's a bit, I agree with you. I think that the hard tire is certainly worth a
I'm not really sure that that's so much the tire.
I don't think it'll fix everything.
Well, the IFL thing, you know, we saw a lot of locking. I mean, I had in practice, I went out in the escape road three times trying to figure out how to unlock the different brake biases, because we just had massive amounts of front locking at the time, and trying to figure that out. You know, and sometimes it's easier to show it on a data when you go down an escape road.
Which part and parcel is a big change to the braking?
The braking package.
System package that we've got this year. It's got a lot more cooling at the front, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. You can use blanking in practice and qualifying, but you're not allowed to use the blanking in the races. And so generally we try to use, you know, temperature to make the brakes work in an operating window. And, you know, you've got this special temperature paint, which we use three different colors, and it burns off at different temperatures. So that's how we sort of find out what the temperature range is that we're using in the brakes. You know, we don't have brake temp sensors anymore. We stopped using them a few years ago, which is probably a good move, because you'd go through them a lot. But yeah, that's definitely changed a lot. So just trying to figure out that side of things.
So I think the jury's still out with the speed traces. I mean, you know, it's a bit of work to be done, but you got to say that the cars, both brands, are a lot closer this year.
For sure, yeah.
Than they were.
Yep, I would definitely agree. And I think the racing seems to be still pretty close with the aero changes.
And what about the extra grip from the you know, what's been given to the cars, you feel like?
Yeah, you definitely notice that. I mean, especially at Bathurst, like, you know, it's such a high-speed track. The over the top of the hill is definitely a lot nicer, I would say. I mean, obviously, you've still changes the balance a little bit, but I think it's definitely given us a total amount of downforce. I'd say we're a pretty understeery kind of car at the moment for us, but, you know, it's definitely fixed a lot of that rear to apex kind of nervousness in the cars themselves, I think.
When we were at Bathurst last year, the chat in the briefings was, when you overextend yourself and drive this thing close to the edge, you're just not sure you're going to come out the other side of the corner, which was the general consensus in the group.
I would say if you're running off, you're running off backwards.
So you're not getting that as much. But it certainly feels like it's a little more under control.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say it's made a big difference. I mean, the lap times over the weekend weren't excessively fast, but that would be more related to the hard tire for sure. Okay. So
interesting.
And for this weekend, we had the first full course yellow procedure going on in the races. We had one where Waters' spindle snapped and the wheel fell off at turn two, and so that was the first Yeah, the first experience of running that at full speed in an actual race setting. You know, we did a 20-minute session for the full course yellow prior to practice on the Friday. So we got a bit of a taste of it there, but to actually do it in the race was obviously a bit different and pretty hectic, I would say. What did you think about it?
I didn't like it at all.
Yeah, I didn't think you would, but it seemed like it took them a long time to decide whether they wanted to do it or not.
Yeah.
I
thought they were waiting to see if the wheel stopped bouncing and
went over the fence.
And went over the fence, yeah. And landed in someone's front yard. Because funny really, as it was rolling down the road, that was probably the most dangerous point, you would think.
Yeah.
But it did run down the edge of the fence. So I can totally see why they left it green. But I wouldn't have liked to have been, you know, driving up towards it as it was smashing in the wall. The thing I didn't like about it is it reminds me of Formula One. You know, they put that full course safety out. Everyone maintains position. We're in the entertainment business. And what a safety car does is bunch people up and it gives us better racing. And so, you know, the purist in me would say, but nowadays things are different. If you look at other sports like cricket, if it was all about what a purist wanted to see, we would only have test match. We went to 2020 and one days and all that stuff to spice it up and make the entertainment good. And so now we've got this going on in our races.
Yeah,
what it's going to do is it's going to sanitize all the pit stops. There's going to be no pressure. You know, you're going to run long on the off chance that this thing comes out and you can do a pit stop and not lose any time. There's lots of things that I don't like about it. Mm. And I get it's progress and I'm not always good with that.
It's somewhat pretty hectic, I would say, in the car. When you get that full course yellow on your dash and they start throwing the boards out and you get the countdown, I mean, when you introduce anything like that style into racing, I mean, everyone races down to 80Ks as late as possible, which is a little sketchy, I will say. And different people at different parts of the track.
Well, that's the thing I was going to say. Different parts of the track sucks because while you might say, well, they're all about in the same position, they're not. You know, I watched...
I had one where they threw it and I was on Conrod and it was pretty much, I got to the just about the chase and so I had to brake early for the chase, but someone that's going into the cutting who's going a lot slower has to slow down to 80 at a very different rate that I am. So in that 15 seconds, I'm braking in a straight line from 280 kilometers down to 80, which is pretty damn hard to judge, I'll be honest. But, you know, the guys that are going over the top of the hill there, you know, are losing time from that.
100%. Bryce and Andre at different points when we were testing it, and, you know, they could lose up to 2 to 3 seconds to a car. Mm. And when you're racing someone, that sucks.
Yeah, it does.
You know, if you're in Forest Elbow and they're on Conrod, then it just doesn't balance up. So a bit of work to be done there. I wouldn't like to see it put out again without a safety car, to be honest. And I think supercars need to look at that.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm not sure if it makes it safer or not.
Well, it's not actually supercars. It's Motorsport Australia.
Yeah. I understand that. Yeah. I mean, is it actually making it safer than a safe foot just going full safety car? I'm not sure. I mean,
probably helps them find the leader of the race because sometimes they struggle with that.
Yeah, at times. You're not wrong. Okay, we'll move on from that. I wouldn't mind chatting to you about, you know, your role throughout a whole weekend of a race meeting. I mean, and probably a lot of people see that it's Brad Jones Racing, but you know, you're obviously not in the technical group of the engineering.
What?
I know, right? That's why you hire them. and also, he's not a mechanic, that's for sure. I don't know if you've ever seen Brad work with his hands, but you won't.
No.
But as a team owner, I mean, obviously we run a 4-car team, which is a pretty big operation, I would say. You know, and obviously you're heavily involved with supercars and, for lack of a better word, the politics side of things with being, you know, a member of the board and you know, being on the commission before. So what does a weekend look like for you?
Pretty stressful.
Because I feel like at times, like, we don't see you at all. You know, there'll be days there where you'll come and go quite a lot and no one knows where you've even been. I mean, I probably know more than most because I obviously we, you know, we stay together in apartments down wherever we go, and you know, I see how much you're on the phone. Holy moly.
Yeah, I normally buzz off to the car and have a sleep.
Yeah, I bet.
No, it is really busy. Well, there's a lot to be done. So I'll be talking to sponsors, talking to other team owners, going to see supercars, trying to sort out things that are going on with the team. There's a whole heap of things. It's really a crazy day. And you know, as you know, I spend a lot of time on the phone trying to sort things out as well, because I'm a pick up the phone and call guy rather than send a text. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's plus I like to be across everything. I like to, you know, see everyone and make sure that we're doing the very best we can, that everything looks right. You know, we've got a great group of people that contribute on all sorts of levels across BJR, and that relieves a lot of pressure off me in that area, but there's still a lot to do, and you can't underestimate the politics of the whole thing and keeping it ticking along. So yeah, it's I should wear a webcam one day, right?
Oh yeah, do a vlog.
Yeah, do a vlog.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would actually be quite interesting for people. I mean, I think
conversations would be.
Yeah, some of them would be. But I think, you know, for your involvement in what you're saying is huge. I mean, I think it's you're not only trying to drive BJR up, but you are trying to push the sport up as well. You know, you're not I wouldn't say you're a selfish team owner. I mean, you want the best for the sport. Obviously you want BJR to win, but at different levels of involvement that you have had with supercars, I mean, you do want the best for the sport.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting one. Certainly from being a driver is a very selfish occupation, you know, it's all, and it needs to be. It's like any elite sports person. And so I've been through that and then come out the other side where, you know, I've always been very active on the financial side of the business. So I'm really in touch with what we spend and what we buy. And so that's always been an interest. But then you grow into team ownership, and what you learn is, you can no longer be as selfish as you once were. It's not about you. It's about everyone around you. And so then fixing problems, making sure things we guarantee we're going to do are done. While we have people that do that, I'm also across it as well. And yeah, it's a very different life. I've been fortunate enough to be a driver, which I loved, and then you know, actually, the first time I ended up on the board, I wouldn't do it. Kelvin O'Reilly talked me into it, because I always felt that people who are in that position needed to be really smart guys, which is not what I thought I was. And so what I learned, though, is being street smart actually counts too. And so, I've got a little bit of that. So, and I really enjoy it. You know, learning is something that you never stop doing. And so being on the board and then being on the commission and being able to contribute back to the sport, something that has given me such a great life and you know, is something I'm very passionate about. And you know, I can, you know, I've stormed out of stewards' hearings and said to them, and when I finish, I'm going to be a steward, because I feel like they need help. But, you know, experience, I should say, not help. And so there's, you know, it's my whole life racing, and we are the biggest team now. We're the only one that runs four cars, but that model works for us here at BJR.
Yeah.
If we cut the place in half, I don't think we go any better. And we're very well structured. Everyone knows their role. But it is very demanding on everyone, including me, race weekend, you know, sometimes I just get back to the pit area in time for a practice session. I mean, you know, I don't know the last time I stuck my head in the window of your car to wish you luck, because I'm usually not around when you drive out to the grid. I'm off seeing someone or doing something. And so it's you know, it's busy, but I do like it.
Obviously.
Yeah, but
40 years later, he's still doing it.
Yeah. I do.
Yeah.
I like meeting the people. I like being involved with people. I'm away from the track. I'm not like that at all. But no. I'm very interactive. When I'm there with and we have some great people and some great sponsors, and they're good people to spend time with.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I would say every weekend for you looks a little bit different depending on what is going on. I mean, AGP is obviously going to look very different to the first round of Bathurst and you know, so on and so forth. So, you know, I think it's I do find that side of things very interesting with your networking, I think we'll call it. But, you know, you seem to be...
Yeah, but it's more than that. I'm not just doing sponsor stuff. Yeah, you know, I'm doing all sorts of stuff.
But I even mean networking across supercars or owners and sponsorship and stuff. I mean, I remember I went into your office once and it was, you know, I want to say it was 11 o'clock and you said, how many people has called you today? And I said 3 and one was a telemarketer. And one of them was you.
Product, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I didn't buy anything or anything. But
yeah, I call you every day.
Yeah. And you had done, I think it was 21 calls by 11 o'clock and the first one was at 7:05 or something. And it's just, you know, you don't put that thing down. I mean, you're probably old school. You want to ring everyone. You don't text, really.
I don't text much.
Unless it's Neil Crompton during a race.
Yeah, or Nathan.
Yeah.
I want the answers. And people like contact. I think they do. I like contact. So they get me whether they like it or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I make stuff happen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when we have a business with 55 people, you need to make stuff happen.
Happen quick, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Bathurst, I would say. So the we use the rain tyres or the wet tyres in practice. I think that's the first proper run anyone in the category really has had a go at them. I mean, we used them a year ago in AGP, but
it wasn't really wet.
Yeah. No, we did one lap and shredded them because it was a drying track. And after one lap, we went to slicks. So I would say that was the first proper time actually using the
And they were ruined after one lap.
At AGP? Mm. Oh, yeah, they were destroyed. Yeah, that's because it was definitely too dry for them. But we didn't really know that at the time. So
They were destroyed at Bathurst when you finished with them as well.
They were destroyed at Bathurst, but it was rather dry at the end of Bathurst as well. So, but there was still a solid, you know, 5, 6, 7 laps there where it was proper wet, and then it dried quite rapidly. I mean, I actually think the new wet tyres significantly faster. It has a lot better feel. It comes up a lot quicker than the old harder wet. I mean, the old harder wet you could do 3 laps on and still feel like you're trying to get temp in the thing, but the newer wet definitely
was
better.
Except when it was totally dry, I've never seen the blocks disintegrate on the old wet, which is why it lasted so long.
Yeah.
But this one, even though it's Bathurst, which means it can be wet up the top and dry down the bottom, you know, the blocks were starting to destroy. When they pulled the tyres off your car, I said to one of the guys, could you fill those holes up with Celastic? I think he thought I was serious. So,
yeah, I mean, we definitely ran them for quite a while. We were waiting for the last minute to go to the slick tyre and it was a bit of an awkward timing.
But our cars were pretty quick in the wet.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really see the time sheets at the time and obviously by the end of the session, we'd run new slicks, so that kind of went. But I thought the cars were pretty speedy in the wet. I mean, it's a very different style in practice on the first time on a wet. Everyone's trying to learn the tyre pressures, which is probably the most important part in the wet, is getting the tyre pressures right. And so
100%.
But they definitely felt a lot better. But I think you are going to have to manage them in a race. You know, if you're doing a Bathurst 1000 and it's a full wet day, you are, you know, doing effectively 25 lap stints. You know, you'll have to...
Well, it'll be really quick, really tricky. You're going to have to
manage your tyres. Yeah, because you might end up having to do 2 stints on 1 set of tyres even at that time. But, you know, we'll cross that bridge when it comes, I suppose. Mm. And Super 2 had a run over the weekend. I mean, unfortunately, their Saturday race, they didn't really even get one flying lap without safety cars or a red flag in the end. Sunday was a little bit better, but, you know, it still had its fair share of safety cars.
Yeah, and it reminded me of Super 2 a couple of years ago when, you know, they didn't seem to be able to do any racing at all. They just spent a lot of time behind the safety car. And I feel like hopefully that's not going to be the case. I mean, we've got two really good young guys here. It's a baptism of fire. They've not raced Super 2 ever before. And then they've gone to Bathurst, the toughest circuit that we go to, or one of the toughest, and tried not to put a foot wrong. And I felt like they both did a really good job. I enjoy Super 2. I watch it even if we don't have a car in
For
it. Or if our car drops out of it, wherever I can. And And you know, clearly that's where the next generation are coming from, and a lot of the kids, not so much now, but you know, four years ago maybe I was still seeing people that I used to watch when we would go go-karting.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, you saw them as a little tiny kid, and yeah, now they're a lot older, and yeah, they're in Super 2. But it's a great class, you know, some of those boys driving those cars are pretty hard.
Yeah, I mean, I thought last year the racing got a little bit better and they got a lot more laps when they went to the timed race. It almost got that mentality of like, oh, there's only 10 laps to go, you know, and a bit less hectic starts and dive bombs were going on. But it seemed to reset after this year with, you know, they've got 30-minute race or whatever it is, and it seemed like a very hectic.
Yeah, it was pretty hectic.
Laps again.
Actually, speaking of that, something we should touch on, which was the first one at Bathurst, is not having a sprint race, the two races on the Sunday. It drags the day out a bit, doesn't it? You know, Sundays. I wanted to keep them two races on the Sunday. I thought it's important for the fans that Saturday was different to Sunday, gave them a reason. Besides the fact they like our racing, but it's just something different. But anyway, we decided as a group that we would have repeat days on Saturday and Sunday, so when someone was watching at home, they knew they could turn the television at the same time every day and they'd see racing, which we've tried before and it didn't really make that much difference. But anyway, did you like it?
Look, I mean, the two races on the Sunday can be bloody hectic. I mean, the difference I think was with those events where we were doing two-day race meetings. And so you would have two practice qualifying a race on Saturday.
Yeah, but we didn't last year. We were still doing two races on the Sunday.
No, but I'm not sure I really rated the short races for a Saturday. I think it was almost like we're doing practices, qualifying, and then you're doing all this emphasis and then you're having a short race. And I don't think that style would at all work at Bathurst. You know, for our category. I think doing a short sprint race at Bathurst, you know, shorter than the 250. The 250 felt short, I felt.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't feel like it. You know, it didn't feel like a 250 at Townsville or an Adelaide. Like, you know, those races are physically demanding. Yeah. It's they're you're managing. You're doing 70 laps at those places. I mean, here you're doing 40.
Well, that's right. It's when you're a driver, I think anyway. You sort of count it in laps in your head, not so much in
time
or distance. Yeah. So it's more about a lap thing.
But also that place is a little less physically demanding. You've got two very long straights. I mean, obviously it's hot in the cars. It's, you know, you're 10 tenths over the top of the hill almost every lap, and your concentration levels are high, but you do have a very long straight to have a break, you know, where, you know, at Townsville and those kind of places, you don't nearly have that kind of break.
You should make the most of it. It's the only place I miss driving a race car.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I thought, you know, driving there twice is never going to be a
no, but the fans, but you know, I mean, having it follow
the 12 hours.
And supercars knew that. I mean, they got pushed into a position.
Yeah,
I mean, totally where agree. I'm lucky is I see a lot of the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah,
so I know the difficulty that they went through. It wasn't a choice. They got forced. We were either going to go to Sydney Motorsport Park twice, or we were going to go to Bathurst twice.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd pick Bathurst, I think, every time.
Absolutely.
To get to Bathurst, we had to piggyback on the back of the 12-hour because they're only allowed to have a certain amount of track closures there for the residents. Mm-hmm. And so they had to do a double header and link it into the one festival type weekend.
Yep,
okay. So totally understand all that. It's a long haul for people. A lot of people go there and camp race there in October. There's been a bit of discussion how it's going to affect our October crowd. I don't think it'll make any difference. Oh, the Bathurst 1000 is such a special event.
It's like going to the Daytona 500. Yeah.
And so I don't think it'll make any difference, and it won't be a thing next year. But we were pushed into a position through the stuff that was going on in Newcastle.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it was sort of like the best of the, you know, best of the bad condition that we have to take.
And moving on from Bathurst, we've got AGP next, which is probably the worst schedule you've seen. I really don't rate that, but it is what it is. I mean, obviously AGP is such a huge event. It, you know, they get hundreds of thousands of people going, and so we're obviously the support category to that one. You know, we don't have a live pit lane at all. We don't have a pit lane full stop. You know, we're in marquees out the back, which I think spectators can't even get into. I believe, which is, you know, really disappointing, I would say. And races without pit stops there.
So, the first thing is a pit lane. I mean, what people, some know and some don't, is we are in this position because to keep the Grand Prix in Victoria, the Grand Prix committee decided, well, Formula One told them that they'd have to have Formula Two and Formula Three, and then they also said they'll need to be in the garages. So so they were worried about the Grand Prix going somewhere else in Australia, so they said yes to almost everything.
Adelaide.
I think probably to the Harbour City was most likely where it was going to go. And what's funny is I'm not sure that would have been a great choice. I mean, I think that is an amazing event and it should always be that circuit. So anyway, so they said yes. So the Formula One people wanted Formula 2 and Formula 3, which Australians, that means nothing to them really. Mm-hmm. And so we're moved into the tents. So that's the first clear. Yeah. We can't do pit stops. We're like Porsche. I don't like being a second class citizen anyway. And so it's not my favorite event.
Yeah.
And then, so now we're in tents, which is no big deal. We used to be in tents.
Yeah.
But because, you know, the whole H&S stuff is going a bit crazy in the world, then they're worried about having people walk in and out of our area. And supercars have fought quite hard to try and change that, but they haven't had any success. So now the fans...
I mean, Formula 3 were in the tents at the back there last year, and they weren't allowed spectators through there either.
Well, yeah, but I'm guessing they don't normally. I'm guessing, you know, it's so hard to get into the F1 area. Yeah, it's like winning the lottery. And so Formula 2 is a step down from that. I've not been trying to get into a Formula 2 pit area anywhere else in the world. I'm not sure why you'd want to, but you can't, you know, so it had a gate on it.
Yeah.
Now we're in that area. We have a gate. So, and I just don't, I mean, I think supercars should stay at the Grand Prix. There's a lot of our corporate partners, a lot of our fans turn up there. We don't race in, you know, we only have two races in Melbourne. So it's really important. Mm. But what we should do is we should have the tents on the outside where our trucks are. Fans should be able to interact. That's one of the strengths of our business.
Category.
And then they need to work out how to safely take the race cars over to the track from the outside of the circuit if they're going to force us to work out of tents.
Yep.
So I'll be interested to see how this whole thing unfolds. Thursday's a busy day for us. It always is. And then we have one race and on Friday, and then qualifying and a race on Saturday and a race on Sunday. So I think supercars could continue to be an important part of the program. Mm. And I think they are because you look at the crowds that we can drag in by ourselves. While the Netflix show has increased popularity of Formula One around the world and Australia as well, and America, I think, are the two it's had the biggest impact on, we still have a value. And I feel like we're somewhat undervalued there at the moment. And it would be interesting to see what it did if we didn't turn up, because we've done that once before. I hope it doesn't get to that.
Yeah.
But if they keep on downgrading us, then there'll be a point where we can't go there anymore.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's definitely an odd weekend for us, but you know, thanks for explaining it. I guess it obviously makes sense, and you kind of dealt the cards you're given when you're dealing with that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I've been around for a while, so I can remember back when we were in tents.
Not that you're old.
Yeah, I'd hate to think that. and so we can work out of tents. Like,
For sure. I mean,
I spent half my life.
Absolutely. You know, and Super 2 do it, you know, quite a few areas. So
honestly, so that will be fine. But I just feel like
the closing
they could
off to spectators and
The thing that burns me the most is spectators can't get to us. I think that's really stupid.
And lastly, we'll just touch on the center of gravity testing there. You know, they're retesting some cars in the supercars category, you know, which we've done before, but it's a very odd process when you look at it, you know, from the outside looking in, and you see cars almost like they're tipping them on their roof. But that is, you know, how they work it out. They get it onto an angle where it's virtually on the tipping point of going one way or the other. And that's really the center of gravity angle. And it's very nerve-wracking to watch or sit in the car when you're, because you have to simulate a driver being in there.
You're a bit young to remember this, but when I was a kid, you'd go to the Albury show and they'd have the Holden Performance driving team and they'd be driving around just like that car is doing the center of gravity test. Yeah. They'd be up on two wheels, they'd hit a ramp and they'd do half a lap. But it is unnerving. Yeah. So for those who've no idea what we're talking about, they use a forklift with a wire on it and they lift the car up on one side until yep. it's at a very uncomfortable position, and then they release the pressure when it's like just tilting and it won't fall down, and then they read the digi gauge and then they work out, they have a formula and they work out what the center of gravity is, and so the reason they're doing it again this year is they changed the weight of panels and they've moved weight around in the cars a little mm-hmm. bit, and they just want to see, make sure they're close. This all stems from when the Mustang first came out a couple of years ago, and it was a pretty much a composite car and was a lot faster than anything else. You know, it was racing against the Nissans and the
ZBs.
The ZBs. And so then they did the test and realized there was a large disparity. And so they had to
put a really heavy exhaust on one.
Yeah.
That didn't help the center of gravity. Well, it helped them. It didn't help us.
No. But they, you know, they had to put some lead in the roof.
Yep.
And so it's not like that with these. No. This is just a check
almost.
Yeah, just to see where they were. I mean, the difference was, you know, not many millimeters
yep.
last year, and I think they'll probably find something similar. But this is just them going through each part of the process with the pressure they're getting from manufacturers and teams to make sure that they're ticking all the boxes they can. And so while it's punishing for us to have to sit around Monday, and I think some teams even have to go there Tuesday, it is quite a time process. So they give you lock shocks to put in the car. Mm-hmm. They give you a setup sheet that everyone has to set their car up exactly the same.
Yeah.
They have two setup patches, and then they have one setup patch which is the one everyone has to go on with an independent mechanic looking at all the measurements to make sure it's right. Then they take you in and they run this test.
Yep.
So it's pretty thorough. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't look that accurate when you look at the pictures. But
no, but it is.
But it's close enough to know if there's a large disparity.
Yeah, if there needs to be changes. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. All right, well, I think we'll wrap that up. I mean, it's been a good chat, I think. You know, we've talked a lot about the ins and outs of what you do as a team owner and your involvement in supercars, and obviously you've got some decent knowledge on racing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been around for a little while.
And probably a little while longer. Anyway, so thanks for listening. It's been really cool to have a chat with you, and we didn't even talk about
NASCAR, right?
No, I know. No, we'll have to leave that for another podcast, I think. We could talk for days on that, I think.
Well, we're both a bit addicted to it, aren't we?
A little bit. Especially at the moment, it seems quite popular, which, you know, I think the racing's really cool. It's a very different style to what we're used to, but it's...
But, you know...
I just love their race so often.
And they love our racing. Like, when we raced in Austin...
And we're back going again.
Yeah. When we raced at Austin, they were sitting in their transporters watching our racing, and a couple of us were, you know, on our televisions watching them when they were doing practice and stuff. So there's quite a crossover, but it is great racing. People underestimate how difficult it is to get two corners right. They think it's easy, but it's actually harder because there's only two corners.
Yeah, and the margin of time. But I think it's almost funny. I think circuit racers tend to watch them at COTA. I don't know if you watched their event at COTA last year, but it was almost funny because how much... they take the piss on track limits. They have no track limits.
It's ridiculous.
So it's like four wheels over the curve. It's like it's like you're completely just straight lining the corner.
Yeah.
But it's hilarious to watch from, you know, when you come from like the supercar world where we're not allowed to do anything like that. You know, you go to Gold Coast, it's super strict about how much curb you guys are allowed to take it, you know, on the back chicanes there, and then you watch them and they're just like straight line it. They're in the dirt. It's like five wide on some corners. They just open up the exits everywhere, and it's kind of funny to watch from, you know, our side of things to then see their rules.
Well, and you look at Shane and how dominant he was in Chicago, and then you go and look at the next race that he did, which is That was the Roval. Yeah. And it's hard when someone's allowed to overrun a corner as much as they can. It's not that hard to find the apex, right? You can miss it by a foot.
You're making
And
your
it's
own.
Still okay because you're not losing a lot of time. Yeah, yeah, and so he didn't look as good. I mean, I know he was sick as well, but you know, it's...
No, and Chicago's a very different style of race. It's obviously their first street circuit. You know, they had some rain thrown in the mix and then... You know, you go to Roval where they've got, you know, the other guys have a bit more experienced. I mean, at times, a few of those guys look like they'll fish out of water, you know, going around Chicago. Some of the brake locks that you'd seen, and it was like they're obviously not, their brakes are not meant for that kind of braking. So,
well, I find it.
They almost seemed like very awkward cars.
Yeah. And not only that, when you're talking, I mean, I spoke to Eddie a bit because he went over there with Shane, and you know, when you talk to them about the simulator and the setups, and they all run basically the same setup.
Yeah.
But when he turned up, he ran a very soft setup because he was looking for something different. But they all sort of get locked into that as a group because they all go through the GM simulator.
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite an interesting process. Yeah. I'll be really interested. I mean, I am very interested to watch how Shane goes this year. It's just not easy. You know, getting a car that almost over-rotates, as clever as he is, you know...
Well, it's just very different to what he's used to as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the people and the processes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then there's so many more people, so there's so many more good people. But I don't think the level of competition will be any tougher in any of the classes he races than what he did here.
Yeah.
You know, I think we have the best touring car drivers in the world, or some of the best. And you know, the proof of that is when someone comes down here and they jump in a car, they don't disappear in the distance. They never have, really.
No.
So the whole NASCAR thing is a big interest for me. So if you like motorsport, come to my place because it's all I really watch. I don't get enough of it during the day.
And turns out we did talk about NASCAR. Anyway, we might wrap it up there. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening and tuning in. You know, yeah, we appreciate the support. And if you've ever got questions, fire us a question at BJR's Instagram or Facebook or wherever you find your socials. Thank you. Thanks for listening and thanks for the support. Make sure you subscribe to the Motorsport Podcast Network. We're going to be dropping a new episode every second Thursday.
Australian Muscle Car Magazine is one of the most respected voices in motoring media. There's been over 140 issues and thousands of stories published in the last 22 years. From the amazing muscle car machines of the past to the present and the stars that steered and built them, AMC has something for everyone. Delve into the heritage of homegrown high performance now at musclecarmag.com.au.